Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side.
Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out.
Before I got here today, I assumed we were free of the shackles of starting with the Astros in segment one. They didn't play. They'll be back in action against the Angels. And I thought to myself, we can go with the NBA. We can talk about, is Kristaps Porzingis the best player to ever play the game of basketball? At least he was last night. All of a sudden, he turned into an unstoppable force, the most dominant big man of all time for that eight-minute stretch of basketball. As he turned that game from a relatively close one in the first quarter to a blowout at the end of the quarter, and the Mavericks never recovered. They got within eight, but that was the end of their run. We'll get into that later. But Keith Law made an appearance on ESPN 97.5 yesterday with the Killer Bees. And I don't know the real back and forth between Keith Law and the Astros fans, but he acknowledged that the two aren't seeing eye to eye on things. Keith Law took the time to air some grievances, to let everyone know that he was right about what he said. So before we get to the sound, I know we keep track of our haters. It's just what we do. But who are the biggest Houston haters? I got to put Keith Law at the top of the list right now. Jeff Passan, during the cheating scandal, rose up those ranks. He's kind of settled down. You've got the Ringer crew, maybe all of them, but particularly the Simmons-Russillo double. Those are at the top of the Houston hater list. Houston fans have interactions with them. But after what Keith Law dropped on our station yesterday, I think he's rising up the ranks. He went after the fans. He talked about the Astros and the way they've been run, and the thought that Dana Brown is nothing more than kind of the front-facing guy for an Astros team that's controlled by the likes of Jim Crane and Bagwell and Reggie Jackson. So, Sean, dealer's choice for you. This is sound from the Killer Bees. Thanks to BMAC for cutting it up and providing it to the rest of us. Where do we go? Do we go with, at least according to BMAC's description, Dana Brown is a puppet? Do we go with Keith Law saying in his own words that the Astros front office is a clown show? Or, well, you pick. I'm listing them off, but what do you think we should start the show with?
It's definitely between those two, at least to lead off. Give me, or I don't know why I'm saying,
well, give me.
Yeah, I can just, you do can it pick right now. Let's go with, he was right about the clown show, because I love a good pat yourself on the back victory lap.
All right, cool, we'll go with that.
I don't care if Astros fans don't like me. I was right. What if I said that was wrong? Fans don't want to hear negative things about their team. That's their right as a fan. But the team's made a lot of pretty colossal mistakes since winning that World Series. I mean, how's that Jose Abreu contract working out? How's that Rafael Montero contract working out? How is letting guys like Jeff Bagwell, with no front office experience whatsoever, make critical decisions working out? The team is clearly in worse shape today than they were the moment they won that World Series. The farm system is worse off. The Major League club is worse off. It's just a mistake after mistake after mistake. You know, the Astros fans want to claim they don't like me. Can I hand you a tissue? Really, where's the lot? What have I said that was wrong? Everything I said about this organization turned out to be true. Sorry, but not sorry.
A lot of that was a banger until he dropped sorry, not sorry. I mean, you're a grown man. What are you doing? You don't say that. I don't even care about the accredited baseball writer, reporter thing. Grown men. Do grown men still sorry not say sorry, not sorry? Did we ever? But the rest of it is a banger. To be honest, the Astros threw him an alley-oop. This is the time to do your victory lap. And it's a very easy one to take considering what the season has been and the questionable decisions that the Astros have made that, hell, we've all called out. And Brian said, I forgot John Boy. That's another one. If we're ranking the all-time haters, at least in the last decade, John Boy goes on that list as well. I can't think of ones for the Texans, mostly because we all agreed with what everyone else was saying about him. Hell, we were harder on the Texans than others. The local, whether it be fans or local media.
Yeah, the national media just forgot.
Yeah, they just stopped talking about them. It wasn't interesting. It didn't drive ratings, so why talk about them? But, yeah, I mean, I guess we could say all of us are the biggest Texans haters up until 2023. But, yeah, the baseball haters, Passan, Law, and John Boy. John Boy just started slandering people. So he may be number one. But as far as the people who think they're fair and balanced, I think Keith Law and Passan are right up there. But I can't disagree, man. It's all the things we said. This is a team that feels like it's run in a way that doesn't coincide with the best parts of them over the last decade. They feel like they've gone in the opposite direction of what got them there. And sometimes a run just has to end. It just seems like the Astros so far are driving at 120 miles an hour to get to the end. Hey, why are we rushing? Why are you on the Autobahn? This ain't Germany. You don't have to drive as fast as you want to the oncoming lights. No, that's not a tunnel that's showing you a way out. That's an oncoming train. And we're driving right to it. Shout out to the Fellowship of Mid. Okay, so Sean, you picked Clown Show, and I'm right. The Keith Law patting himself on the back for 40 seconds. The other thing that stuck out was the perception of Dana Brown. Dana Brown is the one who does the weekly show on 790. He has to answer questions. He has to push the Astro philosophy. And he is the general manager. Maybe only in name. That might be unfair to Dana Brown, but that appears to be the perception because of the prominent role, big name, former players have taken, and Jim Crane stated that he wanted more baseball people around. Clearly, it has not worked out. Here's Keith Law on the perception around baseball regarding Dana Brown.
Yes, that is 100% the perception. Now, I can't speak to you. I know Dana. I haven't talked to him about his role there. I wouldn't ask a question like that. Sure. I just don't think that is appropriate, but I can tell you that is the perception that Jim Crane has decided that he's smarter than everybody else, and he's going to have his little cadre of advisors who he respects because they played the game, not because they are evaluators or have experience in a front office, and he is allowing them to manage, at the very least, the core major league decision.
Keith Law with the Killer Bees yesterday here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. He's hating, but that doesn't mean he's wrong. You can't. It's hard to push back on someone who's hating when you feel the same way they do. I wish I felt differently. I mean, I'm not going to maybe put him in the puppet category. I think he does have marching orders, and the marching orders come from the owner. So what are you going to do about it? You take the orders, you say what you have to say, and you keep cashing them checks. If that's what it is right now, I'm sure Dana Brown has some input. He may not be the biggest voice in the room. But at the end of the day, if I can cash those checks, hell, make me look like the puppet if I get the cash Major League Baseball checks. It's understood. It's his first time as a GM, as the tried and true, that's your title GM. And, you know, his first year, they made the ALCS, so things weren't so bad. As we get further and further away from the moves made by James Click and before him, Jeff Luhnow, things keep getting worse. I don't want to make Dana Brown the avatar for what's wrong with the Astros. I'm sure those guys behind him would. Hey, that's Dana Brown. Hey, Dana Brown, you take the bullets for what's going on.
It really is a perfect. I won't call him a puppet, But it is a very nice setup for Crane and Bagwell and Biggio and Reggie Jackson that it's on his record.
Yeah. If,
and
when Dana
he's
Brown,
the one who has to answer questions
yeah, when,
about it.
If Dana Brown, which we feel like, look, it's June. Inevitably, we feel like this is something where if it continues to go poorly, there's one guy on the chopping block. When he has to go out and go search for another job, if he wants to remain in baseball, if it comes to this, he's going to have to explain what the hell went on here when people start to pick apart his tenure and all the moves that can be questioned. If I'm Dana Brown, I'm keeping a list of things. Hey,
I was overruled
on this, this, and this. Hey, you heard, you know the perception. It wasn't me. It was them. I was a good soldier.
I'd be screenshotting all the texts that I have, yeah, being like, no, we cannot cut Jose Abreu.
all those, I don't know if you need to take a recorder or set your phone to record the conversations, because that would be some real CYA getting ready for the inevitable.
Real Vista Viano stuff.
Yeah.
Shout out to Clipped.
But you're watching that show. Shout out to you for watching it. You may be our correspondent for that, because I have not decided if I'm going to watch that or not.
I won't derail it. Never mind.
Oh, well, you've
45 minute episodes.
So you got to be locked. You got to be all in. They're not even giving you that 25 minute thing where, hey, we're going to treat it like a comedy. It's a drama. You get to see what Clay Thompson looks like, according to them. It's all great stuff. All great stuff. But I'm keeping a list of things that aren't my fault, because it feels like at some point the guillotine's going to fall on one guy. It's going to be Dana Brown if things keep going the way they're going.
I mean, he's the only guy who can get fired, really.
It's
he's
true.
He's the only guy who has an official title.
Had to
apply for his job.
Yeah.
The other three are, I am Jeff Bagwell. I am Craig Biggio. I am Reggie Jackson. And then the owner.
And oh, by the way, I'm the owner, so ain't no one firing me. Yeah. Fall guy, possibly.
Puppet. Keith Law says yes.
Yes. He won't say it, but he'll say it.
Because he knows Dana Brown.
Yeah, it's an
I feel like that's the reason why he won't say it.
It's an inappropriate question. You heard him. But the perception is that this organization is being run by people not named Dana Brown, and he's simply the guy who you have to hear make excuses, if you want to use that term, for what the hell is going on and why they make decisions. But, you know, Keith Law also agrees with Dana Brown about something. We'll hear about that on the other side. The less salacious quotes, the less salacious sound. He agrees with Dana Brown on something. I don't particularly agree with it. And we'll hear from Keith Law on that. We'll also get into what PFF said about the Texans and why you should have some concerns. And to be honest with you, it was like a soft thing, because they aren't even really believable when it comes to their reasons for it, but it's a segment they do where they say reasons for Team A to be concerned. So they had to find things, so we'll talk about that throughout the show as well. We have odds on who's likely to make the CFP. Our resident Longhorn should be happy about it. Pretty good odds for that Longhorns, and we'll get into the other teams, and also who could be a Cinderella as far as the CFP is concerned. And this is a point of conversation because the schedule came out this week about when those games will be, how you can set up your Christmas plus New Year's football watching schedule. A lot of games when you include the NFL to get ready for. So we'll talk about that. And also, of course, the finals. Celtics win game one handily. Kyrie, not great. A lot of stuff to get to. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
No, Sean, it's a Friday. Feeling pretty good. And we do this for a living. It's not bad. I mean, everyone has complaints about the job, but as far as real complaints, we don't have many. I'm walking back from getting some water, and you may notice I don't have a water cup with me.
Yeah, what happened? You finish it?
No. I dumped, for whatever reason, one hand clipped the other, and I dumped the whole, I don't know how, I can't explain it. Maybe, I can't explain what happened, but I dumped the whole cup of water. And, you know, it hits the floor, you get your paper towels, and that's cool. But somehow, most of the water landed in my left shoe.
Oh.
So, there's a puddle of water in my shoe, so we'll see how I handle it. The adversity, I'm grinding here, and I got some adversity to deal with. God. We'll see how I overcome.
I can't even, like, comprehend what happened to you.
I can't explain it.
I know that you had water in a cup, and now it's in your shoe.
Yeah.
And a little bit on the ground.
There's none
in the cup.
Half of it's in my shoe, half of it's on the ground, none of it's in the cup. And I dropped it, and I said, oh, that's not good. And one of the interns, yeah, it doesn't sound good either, because you can hear, it was so much, you could hear a splash. So I was in there using the entire brick to clean up the hallway. We don't have a lot of people rolling through here, so hopefully no one slips. I got a lot of it, but, you know, it's still slick out there. So not that anyone's listening that's going to be walking through, but
maybe BMAC or someone.
Hopefully. Hey, he's getting here at 10:30.
Oh, yeah.
True. Yeah. Yeah. So you feel pretty good, and then life says, don't feel so great. And my left foot, don't feel so great.
Yeah. Hey, I know the Celtics won game one. How about some water in your shoe, too?
Yeah, I know you were hate-watching that game last night, and you knew the hate-watching experience was going to be poor for you at the end of the first quarter. I'm giving you some more.
You know what? I got one more in me.
Yeah, I got one more reason for your last 24 hours to not be so great. Here it is, water in your left shoe. So, hey, man, sometimes adversity hits. You gotta roll.
Okay. I'll keep when we're writing the narrative of your career based off this one.
This is my flu game.
This June it's my 7th show.
It's my shoe game.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if you go 3 for 19, hey guys.
It's my Harden game.
Remember, he was battling through the water in his shoe.
Yeah, if you're shooting
a spring tour date.
If I was messing up some brakes, couldn't get the brake on time, couldn't even throw the brakes, remember.
Yep, that's the puddle in your shoe.
Puddle right my shoe. I can hear the squishing. It's not great.
I think it's picking up on. No, it's not.
No, it's not that bad, but I can feel it. We were, before I was sidetracked by water in my shoe, we were going to get into Keith Law saying on the Killer Bees yesterday that the Astros should be buyers. This show went on a bit of a rant yesterday discussing why we didn't think that was a good idea. What do they have to sell first off? And let's get to 500. But Keith Law looks at the construction of this roster, the age of it, and thinks the Astros should go in another direction.
They should be in, right? This club was built to contend. They are close enough to contention. And I think they can look at players like Bregman and say, we will get more production from Bregman the remainder of the season than we have from him so far. I think they should also look realistically. You know, they've taken some real hits to the pitching staff. That's going to be tough to replace. I do think they're in the situation where they should say the farm system is not in great shape, but they have some players who would have some value in trade, and they've been willing to take on some money in the past. I think they should take that same approach and just say, we're all in, especially with Bregman potentially leaving in free agency. I'm not going to write him off and say he's gone, but you take the attitude that he might be gone, and they should act accordingly and say, if this is the last year of Bregman, we do have a club that's a little bit on the older side, we should just say this might be the last big push with the possibility that you're thinking about rebuilding to, on some level, starting next year.
Well, I know we've talked about our disagreements on that. And this is, at least from my perspective on his comments, is that the expectation is that this team will get better, turn it around, and be close enough where it matters. And, yeah, we said yesterday, talk to me when that's the case. Through 60-plus games, there's been no indication that they will. When there is a real one, and that would have to be a thing by at least mid-July, where there's an actual run, and it'd have to be, considering how they've played, it'd be a departure from anything we've seen from them. If that run happens, then we can have a conversation. And even then, I don't know where and what you're going to have to give up to actually be all in. And this is just a repeat of yesterday, but, you know, Keith Law, a respected source, unless you're an Astros hater of him, had some thoughts on the Astros' future, and he thinks it kind of begins and ends with this year. After that point, we're talking about a bit of a rebuild, although we look at the roster. The pitching staff outside of, well, outside of Urquidy and Javier, who likely won't be around in 2025, at least for most of it, probably going to have Verlander. You'll have Fromber, health permitting. And then you'll have, I guess, McCullers and Luis Garcia. And then you'll have whatever you can get out of Hunter Brown, and if Blanco can maintain what he's been for the first couple months of the year, and Arrigetti. So I feel like the rotation, if I'm taking Dana Brown's word, that there's still a playoff rotation, will be okay next year too. So if the rotation's okay, I'm not sure this is their last year. I just know the impending free agency of Bregman and Kyle Tucker a year after that may cloud the judgment. I think 2025 is the last year, because I think you're without Bregman. You're likely going to lose Tucker, and then you are talking about a lineup that's completely different from what we've seen over the course, particularly over the course of the last 4 years. So I don't think 2024 is the last time that they can actually go compete. 2025? Yeah. That's probably where we're talking about, let's do a soft reset for this team. And I just hope the final years, whatever they may be for Jose Altuve, isn't like a one last dance. I want him to have it, but I hope the one last dance includes competitive baseball team, because he's like, hey, I was here when we were terrible. I don't want to revert back to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe this will come back to bite me, but they will have Altuve and Yordan at the very least.
Pena.
So and
Yiner.
Loprofito. Yeah, Yiner. So like, I'm just not sure how bad it could be. I feel like they'll be obviously not up to the Astros baseball standard that we have now, but they're not going to be the White Sox.
No.
Like, they're not going to be some embarrassment to baseball. It's just they might not, or they'll be competing for a wild card, or maybe just outside the wild card race. And that, to me, that's not like some... Absolutely. It's not like the last years of Kobe, where they're winning like 20 games every year.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's not...
That's true.
It's not that bad. I mean, honestly, it's about how they're playing right now. It's,
yeah, I would
seven
hope they,
games out of the wild card.
Yeah, what's the difference between now and what it might be without like, Bregman and Kyle Tucker, the way they're playing? Yeah, to your point. And, you know, those guys would be gone. But Jim Crane, despite some evidence to the contrary when it comes to what we believe is the case about paying guys like Bregman and Tucker, says they're going to be in it as long as he's around. So it doesn't preclude them from spending money on someone else.
Yeah, what are we talking about?
I'm listening to Keith Law.
We're being
so
silly right
I'm
now.
I'm allowing Keith Law.
The window's always open.
That's what he told us. Always open.
Keep Jim Crane alive and owner of the Astros, and the window's open.
The window's...
Right
yeah.
now, the window's open.
Just
this year.
Just because he's the aughts version, well, Jerry Jones is still the guy, but just because he's baseball's Jerry Jones, needing to wrest power away from the guys who got you there, the Cowboys are good. They just never win at the highest level. Maybe Jerry Jones or Jerry Crane, whatever I want to call him, gets into that mode where he'll make big moves.
Don't call him Jim Jones.
That's why I avoided that for a reason. I mean, Jim Jones the rapper, great. The other Jim Jones... Not so great.
I'm not even sure if the rapper's great.
It's better than the other one.
I don't think
if we're
Jim
ranking
Crane
Jim
would,
Joneses.
Yes. Okay. He would prefer to be a member of Dipset.
Yeah.
Yes. The other guy.
Yes. I think that's fair to say.
He also wouldn't be super psyched.
Yeah. I don't think him and Joel Santana will get along.
I mean, they're already listening to Jeff Bagwell and Craig Biggio. Might as well just see what Joel's has to say. You know.
Could it be any worse? He might have been. I kind of know that Montero guy.
Hey, Cameron. I know Cameron.
He's in the sports.
Yeah, you got
Cameron's
sports.
Got plenty of opinions.
Yeah. Come on. Who do we sign?
Cameron's like, I'm a New Yorker. I don't care. I don't care what you guys do, to be honest. So the Keith Law has some ideas. Is it the last year? I don't agree. They will have a good team next year. It'll be different. But I still think they'll have a shot. I don't think the end of the Astros is as close as Mr. Law thinks. We will get to a team who's in a different spot. They're trying to ascend. And there are some questions. And once again, as I said in the first segment, this is really about playing devil's advocate. Even when you listen to the entire video from PFF discussing what might get in the Texans' way. It doesn't sound like they really believe it. They're just listing some things that might stop them from being a good football team, just in case it happens. So we'll hear from the guys from PFF about potential roadblocks for a Texans division-winning team, or maybe even a Super Bowl team when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back. So, we're in that time of the year where OTAs are going on. We had mandatory ones this week. I think next week they're more voluntary, or in some cases not going at all. I know some teams they're going to have a break until July. I'm not sure where the Texans stand on that. That might be the case for them as well. But it's a time where people have to try to produce content, and I guess PFF does this yearly, where they go through the teams, all 32, and pick apart something that might be a weakness. And we look at the Texans team and say there's a lot of strengths. We like to focus on the offense because that's where all the star power is. You know, you have Danielle Hunter, Danico Autry, and then certainly Stingley on defense. But the focus of the conversation for the most part throughout this offseason has been about the offense because C.J. Stroud and his rookie year. Now, once again, this is just really a devil's advocate segment, particularly for the Texans. Some other teams, their weaknesses are pretty clear, so the guys on the show can go all in on those. But this one's more about if there was possibly a reason why things wouldn't go well, these would be the reasons. Here is the PFF guys on C.J. Stroud and a possible regression.
There is a chance that we just saw, you know, a really high-end version of what C.J. Stroud is going to be. We got like, we were saying it all last year. He's just Georgia C.J. Stroud all the time. What if he isn't? What if we just got that for a run and we're going to get a different version of him this year? And now you just invited a guy like Stephon Diggs into the building who, you know, has brings some chemistry issues with him, oh boy. It seems.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Stroud, one of the most impressive rookie seasons we've ever seen. However, in the last 10 to 12 years, we've seen impressive rookie seasons like RG3 in year one, again in the Shanahan scheme or derivatives. Bobby Slowick was there for RG3's rookie season. Then it all fell apart in 2013. You also have Baker Mayfield had his best season for a while. Like, his rookie season was his best season for, you know, until last year, basically. So there is always that possibility of regression from C.J. Stroud. And that's the other thing, too. It's right, like, defenses adjust, right? It's not just about you played well, therefore you will forever. Now there's
tape on you.
Yeah, there's the tape and there's the counter argument that the defense gets to bring to the table here this year, and you got to have answers to that. And now I would say stylistically, the way Stroud plays, I feel good about, you know, he's going through his reads, you know, goes 1 to 2 to 3, throws the ball accurately. I mean, he's got the ingredients to be able to adjust to what defenses throw at him.
That's Sam Monson and Steve Palazzolo from PFF. And the context around that particular clip is, hey, we have to find something. We kind of believe CJ is that guy, but hey, this is the show. Let's try to find something that might lead to a Texans regression. So they don't even believe it. You don't have to put them on the hater list. They're not. They don't belong.
Okay.
Just
they're under investigation.
They're not on the jump.
They're on the watch list.
Okay, just in case. But no, they're not of the ilk of Keith Law or Jeff Passan or the Ringer guys or even John Boy. These guys are, hey, we're just trying to produce some content for you. Watch it, please. And we'll kind of give you a reason why things might go poorly.
I don't know. They
how dare they, right? How dare they even think it?
They put Baker Mayfield on C.J. Stroud. Don't do that.
And RG3.
Yeah, come on. No, it's disrespectful. I do think it is funny that the possible reason for regression was He was just so good last year.
Yeah.
like that's basically what it was.
He had one of the best rookie seasons for a quarterback of all time.
He was just so good that
– And we were a little surprised. We got to be honest. We didn't expect it.
Or just like, yeah, the biggest issue is just how good he was last year.
How good he was and how off we were on what he could possibly be.
Yeah. They are right that it was like the Georgia game.
Over like, and over and
Georgia
over
game,
again.
CJ Stroud every time.
Yeah. So, sure, could it possibly not be as good? Maybe, but there is no real expectation that it will be. We played the sound from Lewis Riddick yesterday. He's all in. I think a lot of people are in that mode. You can barely find anyone that will even dare to think the Texans aren't winning this division, unless they reside in Indianapolis, because the Colts will say, hey, we're one third string running back drop away from winning that game. So, sure, Indianapolis people can delude themselves. But we kind of all know the deal. The real thought is how much improvement will C.J. Stroud make and how more dynamic will this offense be with the healthy Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon. The arrows seem to point up. The other thing they got to, though, was something that I think is an actual issue. So if there is a real concern about a potential backslide for the Texans, despite what Steven Nelson might think of D'Amico, he was a solid cornerback. And there's a story about a cornerback I've mentioned for the Texans that we'll get to. It may be a reason he's still available. I don't know if the NFL teams had kind of a preview of this and knew this was coming down. But, yeah, Xavien Howard, if what is being said about him is true, not a great guy. We'll get to that in a little bit. But here is maybe a legitimate reason concerning the cornerback position and a little bit of the offensive line about why the Texans may not be as good as we hope they are.
I would say specifically cornerback two, opposite Derek Stingley.
Right.
They're going with Jeffrey Okuda, C.J. Henderson, draft Kamari Lassiter. It's a big question mark, I would say, heading into camp.
Yeah, no, definitely. And to be honest, you know, Derek Stingley played fantastically last year, but he was worse the previous year, and we know cornerback volatility being what it is. I mean, Derek Stingley might not have as good a year as he did last year. Then you might have a guy... What your top corner isn't playing great. Your second corner is a big question mark anyway, and the entire cornerback group looks like a problem at that point.
And we have to highlight the offensive line again. Every friend of Kyle seems to be able to overcome offensive line poor offensive lines on paper. The Texans did it last year as well, but I wouldn't say it's a position of weakness. Kendrick Green at guard coming back, Titus Howard at right tackle, Shaq Mason getting a little bit older. So there are still some questions up front for the Texans.
No, agreed. I mean, that offensive line, it's hard to know, actually, with these Shanahan offensive lines. Like, do we just need to accept that they're able to make things work with significantly worse-looking groups on paper than other teams can and kind of stop harping on it? Because it seems like we've been doing that for the 49ers, the Dolphins, and the Texans now for a while, and all three of those teams are arguably the three best offenses in football. Working with those offensive lines, like at some point, we should probably recognize that it's just not a thing, or they're all ticking time bombs waiting for one of them to detonate.
Yeah, they said those particular things a little bit more at their chest. Those could be concerns. The offensive line has health as a question, and is Titus Howard a good right tackle? He'll be playing there. At least he thinks he should be playing there, and... They did draft someone who could possibly replace him or shift him inside to guard if they think that's the best option. But Titus Howard's not a good guard, so you would have to hope that he solidifies his spot at right tackle and Blake Fisher becomes more of a swing tackle, because having a second-round pick be capable of doing that early in his career, it's a great option because injuries happen. We know Titus Howard has dealt with them. The interior, Kenyon Green, D'Amico said good things about him this offseason. We'll have to wait and see. And certainly, Shaq Mason should be solidified at the other guard spot and center. There were injury concerns there last year. I think that's, if we're talking about things that could possibly get in the way, the cornerback position beyond Stingley, although Kamari Lassiter is another guy who D'Amico has said positive things about, and people out there who've watched him have said those same things as well. So, but that's practice. Those are guys in T-shirts. Nice new practice jerseys. They're nice. They've got the Texans' new font.
Redesigned.
It's all good. But they still don't have pads on. And we won't find out all we need to know about Kamari Laster really until, I guess, we'll see in those shared practices. We'll find him. We'll see him go against a competition that doesn't have a Texas helmet on. We'll see him in early on, as long as he's healthy, in the Hall of Fame game. So those are where I will make my first determinations about Kamari Laster. And then, obviously, we'll see how Okuda and Henderson fare once they see competition. But we kind of know what they look like when they see opposing wide receivers.
Okay. That's where I'll make all my judgments on the entire
Hall of Fame game?
The Hall of Fame game.
Where CJ won't play.
Show me what you got.
Where Stephon Diggs won't play. Where the entire starting offensive weaponry won't play.
They won a game with Case Keenum as quarterback. No excuses.
Oh, you think they should run Caleb Williams off the field? No, they're not. No,
why
they're not?
Not
playing Chicago. They're playing Chicago in week two.
Who they're
playing
in the Hall of Fame game.
They're playing them twice. Okay.
Yeah, they're playing them twice in like a month.
I thought so. So you think they should run the Bears off the field in that game, no matter who's out there?
Hey, I'm just saying, you know.
If you're a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
Even if it is Davis Mills out there, get the job done.
You supposedly improved this year.
Depth-wise.
This is a team that, they picked number one, but they weren't the worst team in the league.
No,
but
they were not.
They were like, what, they've had the number nine pick? Come on. Show me something.
I need, Kamari Laster, lock down Roma Dunze.
Those twins from South Dakota State, because I know they'll probably play the entire game.
Probably a lot.
Show me something. Either one of you.
Kamari Laster, I'm going to need you to lock down Roma Dunze. That's all I'm saying.
For the eight plays he's out.
Yes. Get it done. Pistol Pete, if that is your real name, we'll talk to you on the other side. Anyone else wants to call in, 713-780-3776 is the number. Certainly, you can tweet at us at Sean A. Mapes at DelV2. We'll talk to you on the other side.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Appropriate that Sean is playing this song because there are lyrics that talk about someone being their biggest hater. I hate the way that you walk. I hate the way that you talk. And that's how I feel about the Celtics. I hate everything about them, honestly. There's nothing redeeming about them. I know some people, because Dallas is in the series, you're going to root against the Mavericks. That's understood. There is that Houston-Dallas thing that people will latch onto. But me, not being born here, I don't have the same hate for Dallas that others have, so I'm all in on hating the Celtics. Didn't go well for me last night. Went great for the Celtics. Sean, at what point in the game did you go, I'm going to tune into something else?
I think the run at the end of the third quarter by the Boston Celtics, I didn't actually tune into anything else, but that's when I was like, okay, this thing is over.
Yeah. The Celtics were up by, I believe, was it 17 at the end of the first? Kristaps Porzingis was.
The first quarter.
First quarter.
Yeah.
Wasn't like 37-20 or something. Yeah. It was for the first, you know, 6-7 minutes of the ball game, back and forth, turnovers. Not great shooting. And then with Kristaps Porzingis entering, the game turned.
Yeah, he said, not tonight.
Yeah. He became the best player of all time for like 8 minutes. I'm not saying that's what he is. I'm just saying what he was in that stretch.
It's just taller Larry Bird.
Yeah, blocking, but also throwing rim protection as well. You got Larry Bird, a giant Larry Bird who can also protect the rim. That's what we saw last night. Yeah. The Mavs were like, you know, we're going to try this guy a couple times. Oh, that didn't work. Let's try him again. That was their philosophy on the offensive end. We're going to try the shot blockers. It didn't go well for them. And Kristaps Porzingis, no matter how tight the coverage, now, of course, the height advantage certainly gave him the ability to get shots off. But he was spectacular. There was a question, particularly for me, about what he could be entering the finals after having so much time off. Pretty good, I'd say. Dominant, I'd say. This isn't the Kristaps Porzingis I expect to see. No matter how long the series goes, I know people are saying he unlocks the Celtics, and that's what a lot of people said throughout the year, how good he was and how he helped the Celtics team reach heights they hadn't reached before as far as how dominant they were. You see the stats, all the 20 point leads in games, how many times they won games by double digits. He was part of that equation. And yeah, I don't think he'll be as good as he was last night, but it might not matter. Just be good. And his return to the series has people talking about this could be a short one. The Mavericks have no answer. Yes, if he's unconscious and can't miss, they have no answer. I don't think that's what he will be for the next four or five games, however long this thing goes. But even just an above-average Porzingis might be the biggest difference in the ballgame. Good night for the Celtics overall. Good night for Jaylen Brown. Tatum was a passenger. Didn't really need him in that one. And the jokes were flying about the Celtics' ability to win games without Tatum. That's the thing he's been fighting throughout the year. Not necessarily him, but that's the narrative. Hey, how good is he really when this team can be this good when he's not doing much? Luka, he got his pocket picked a couple times in that first half. Celtics defense got after him, picking him up for full court. But he still had a really good game. As Sean mentioned, the end of the third quarter where the Celtics made their run, they had to make a run after being up big because of Luka. That game was an eight-point difference in the third quarter. The Mavericks had the ball. Derek Lively had a rebound. He traveled. The Celtics got the ball back, got a free throw. Kyrie traveled on the next possession. Celtics scored again. All of a sudden, they're up 11, and they pushed that lead out to the point where, okay, this game's over. So, a game of runs. The Celtics had two giant ones that put the game away. The Mavericks had one to kind of get them back in it, but it wasn't enough. And, of course, the biggest storyline, if you're on the Mavs side, is Kyrie's game. Now the numbers are out. He's 0-11 since he was the 0-11 since he stomped on the logo. I know he's 0 of his last 11 against the Celtics, and I think people
that's the market line of demarcation.
Yeah, him stomping on the logo when he was a Net, and he has not won a game.
Talking about it is triggering, I'm sure.
for all of us, I think.
Disgusting act.
Yes, how dare he put his foot on a logo?
No one walks all over the midcourt logo.
I mean, it's part of how you get up and down the court.
No one does.
It's part of how you get up and down the court, Sean. No one walks around that logo as they're heading up court.
Like it's a college football locker.
Yeah. But why would you put a giant logo that makes my day harder? I have to walk around it. Why don't you just put up on the ceiling for me to watch? I like the college football locker rooms where, particularly when they have recruits in the building who don't know the rules, they'll put like stanchions around it to make sure no one steps on it. All right, guys. You're taking it a little too serious. God forbid that a player you want on your team doesn't know the rule and walks on your logo.
Yeah. Kyrie needs to play better.
It's always like it's a wet floor or wet paint. Never touch it.
No.
Kyrie needs to know. You don't rub your Kyrie 4s, whatever the hell the shoe was at the time, into Lucky's face. Apparently that's the name of their mascot.
Now it's the Antas. Don't want any Anta on the.
Yeah. No matter, I don't care if your dad's the first guy who will represent you. That's the story out there too. So
yeah, but he was 0-for-5 from 3-point line.
Yeah, he missed some wide open ones too. Yeah,
yeah. That's the thing with some of the misses that Kyrie Irving's going to have. Mostly the 2-point misses that he has. They're just super tough shots that. Some nights they just don't go in. There's a little bit better contest, whatever it is, that you just don't make the – you pivot 4 times and then shoot a fadeaway over someone taller than you, and, that one doesn't go in. Okay. But the – especially the three-pointers. Some of these three-pointers were wide open where it was just either a breakdown or just good offense where they get Kyrie Irving a catch-and-shoot wide open. He just missed it. So that with – the fact that they're also kind of turning the ball all over the place for a little bit in that first half, that really combined with Porzingis being unconscious, they got it close in the third quarter, but they lost the game in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, they put on a great run. We know they're capable of that. We know Boston can go into stretches where they don't execute, the shots don't go down because of their propensity to take threes, and just simply going by the numbers, you look at the 3-point difference, you can point to that and go, okay, that's the margin of victory. But overall, I don't take much from it other than you can't be that bad in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And you're out of the game at that point. And you if you are in a game at the end of one, then it changes the whole complexion of it. And I don't expect the Mavericks to be down by what I believe was 17 points at the end of one the rest of the series. And if they are, then we can wrap this one up early and get ready for the draft.
One thing for Mavs fans to hold on to, Jason Kidd as a head coach in his head coaching career is 1-6 in game ones.
Should have expected it, I guess.
Yeah. Just roll out Dwight Powell the entire time.
But if you're going to lose anyway.
Yeah, just see what Jaden Hardy's got.
Give Tim Hardaway. They tried and it didn't go well.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Hardaway even got 3 minutes at a point, and as you might imagine, that didn't go well either.
No. But I'm looking at the box score. Did not. Oh, he got a steal. That's the only thing he did. And missed two shots.
Yeah.
that's his contribution to the game.
And even after what you could be concerned about is even after an extended amount of time off, there are points in that game where Luka was struggling to get up the floor, grimacing as well. You would have hoped. Now, of course, the knee could be something that just won't get better until a really extended rest in the offseason and maybe there's surgery. Who knows? Maybe a cleanup thing needs to be done. But he had the Luka face on at points, particularly when they were struggling. All of a sudden, when he was making shots.
Thank you for pointing that out.
There was a pep in that step.
Yeah. The limp was so much worse when they were down 20 than when they were down
8. I love when Luka misses a jumper and he's struggling, and then he points at his, hey, get my guy. I'll be there shortly.
Or when he does the thing where the ball goes out of bounds or something, and then he immediately reaches down to readjust
the brace. Yeah,
I don't even think he's wearing a brace.
Just
I think
sleeve?
It's just the sleeve. Like he just has to fidget with it, so you know
he's hurting.
Yeah,
but when he made that 3 to take it to 8, he had the stink face on, looking at people. Yeah,
looking for people to say something.
What, you want to say something? Yeah, So he is definitely one that'll let you know.
Great job by the Boston crowd. Just give him nothing.
Yell at Kyrie and boo him. Don't talk to Luka. You don't want none of that.
Don't even look at him.
Pretend like he's not there. So game one handily goes to the Celtics. Game two is not till Sunday. So 2 days off to see if the Mavs can respond. Hopefully for us, if we want a good series, maybe be in it at the end of the first quarter, and then we actually have a ball game. We are done with hour one. Pistol Pete hung up, but anyone, if he wants to call back, he can do that. Anyone else, you're welcome to bring up anything you like, whether it be the finals, the comments by Keith Law. Certainly the Texans are available to talk to as well. When we come back, we're going to give you the odds for who's going to make the CFP. It's courtesy of ESPN. A Texas team high up there, to no surprise of anyone. And we'll give you the rest of the list as well. And maybe some Cinderellas that Sean and I will judge if they're actually Cinderellas. But some teams maybe you're not thinking about who could be in the CFP, as the schedule for the CFP is now out. It's going to be a congested football schedule in the month of December, particularly starting with the 20th, because the NFL will be going. But you now know when you're going to be able to watch those games. We'll talk about that, who could make it, who might be on the outside looking in when we come back.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.